Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
When 10,000 people lose their jobs at a company, does that mean a turnaround or the beginning of the end? What Americans really think about Obama's health care law and the sweet smell of money? Turns out it's not sweet, exactly. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Sarah Gardner in for Kai Rizdahl, and this is the Marketplace podcast for Thursday, the 14th of June. Good as always to have you with us. Today, news of the latest casualty from the wireless battlefront. Handset maker Nokia is adding another 10,000 workers to its layoff list. The company has already announced 30,000 job cuts just in the past 2 years alone. Nokia is also warning investors that its second quarter losses, they're going to be worse than they thought. Blame the competition from Apple's iPhone and Google's Android operating system. So, can Nokia survive? Marketplace's senior business correspondent Bob Moon reports.
You don't have to rewind very far to figure out why all this is starting to sound painfully familiar.
Nokia, the big mobile phone maker, said today it's laying off 4,000 people around the
world. Nokia cut its revenue projections, just the latest step in a downward spiral.
That news from last year only seems to be getting worse. This latest round brings the total number of planned layoffs since 2010 to one in every three Nokia workers.
It's now laid off 40,000 people, which by any measure is dramatic.
Ben Wood is an analyst at Britain's CCS Insight. He says without these cuts, the company feared it could face a cash crunch even before it could introduce its full line of new Windows-based smartphones.
It's absolutely clear these are make-or-break decisions that have been taken today.
But Wood says that doesn't necessarily mean Nokia should be counted out. The company pivoted quickly to launch its first Windows phone recently, and although sales in the U.S. and Europe have been less than hoped for, Gartner analyst Carolina Milanese says there are other places to grow. Nokia is a well-known name globally and could be in a good position to take advantage of its brand if it can just hold out long enough.
In emerging markets, there's a huge opportunity with economies improving in markets like India, for instance, and China, where you have users there that will be migrating to smartphones.
Still, analyst Ben Wood says Nokia has no room for error.
It's still playing catch-up, and while it's playing catch-up, other big companies like Apple and Samsung have made further strides forward.
Wood says today's cuts could help put the company in a better position to stay in the game. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
The World Health Organization announced this week that diesel fumes cause lung cancer. The WHO has labeled diesel as a known carcinogen. Now, that's not exactly the kind of thing advocates of clean diesel want to hear right now. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports on diesel's brand image and what this latest pronouncement might mean for the fuel.
So who hasn't run from the stinky wake of a noisy bus or semi? Turns out there's a reason to hold your nose.
It's like a giant rolling cigarette, causing risks very much akin to being someone locked in a room with someone else who's smoking.
That's Frank O'Donnell, president of Clean Air Watch. He says we're not just dodging fumes from soot-spewing buses and trucks. Trains and boats also use diesel. Diesel engines power construction equipment and tools used by miners. Alan Schaefer heads the Diesel Technology Forum, a trade group. He says the WHO relied too much on studies of old diesel engines in determining that diesel fumes cause cancer.
In many ways, it feels like a very retrospective look backward, you know, like looking in the rearview mirror to try and help inform what our policies are today.
Schaefer says the new diesel engine is very different. It burns cleaner fuel, has emissions controls and filters. But is that going to be clear to consumers thinking about buying a diesel car? Or will they be scared away by the WHO's cancer warning? Schaefer says new diesel will not lose its luster.
I think there's a very bright future for all kinds of clean diesel technology, from passenger cars to the biggest off-road construction and mining equipment.
But there are still plenty of old diesel engines around to give the new ones a bad name. Frank O'Donnell estimates there are millions in the U.S. because diesel is durable. Engines last up to 30 years. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The stock market was fueled up today. Details when we do the numbers. Big elections in Greece this Sunday. They're pitting the pro-austerity crowd against the anti-austerity crowd. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is taking a tough line against Greece. Keep your promises to cut spending and deficits, is her warning. And most Germans agree with her, if the polls are correct. We've been sounding out Europeans all week long in a special series.
A man walks into a bar, he says, give me a Bacardi and Coke.
Our correspondent Stephen Beard's been bar hopping through Europe all week. Today, he's reporting from Berlin.
If rock music and shabby gothic decor are your thing, Berlin's 8mm bar is the place for you. It's a world away from the conservative beer cellars of Munich and the button-down wine bars of Frankfurt. 8mm's hip young owner is American-educated Louis Drosch. He feels for the Greeks and other hard-pressed Europeans. After all, he says, Berliners know what it's like to be down at heel.
Berlin, not too long ago, declared bankruptcy, and Berlin seems to be doing better financially, so I think on a local level, we all feel pretty good here.
Berliners may be in the mood to help, he says, but they're not happy about the antics of Greek anti-austerity protesters in Athens. They've been daubing the swastika over pictures of German Chancellor Angela Merkel and doing Nazi salutes.
These symbols are outlawed within Germany, and so to see other people using them, and it's unbelievable. It's so taboo. I just see it as really shocking. It really is.
One of his customers isn't shocked or even surprised. 23-year-old musician Max Buskol blames the German government for throwing its weight around in Athens and bullying the Greeks into a strict program of austerity and economic reform.
It's 1938 all over again, you know? It's like we're going to take over this country just for a short while. We're going to swap it all around, make it German, and then leave. It doesn't work. You know, it's just an invasion. It is an invasion.
Mind you, as a German taxpayer, Max does worry about sending too great a share of his taxes to Athens.
I wouldn't like to see a huge percentage going to Greece or something. I would like to see the schools getting the money for that and stuff, you know, like stuff that my children would benefit from.
Scratch the liberal surface of these young Berliners and you often do find a layer of German fiscal conservatism. Julia Hartz works in publishing.
Of course it feels kind of strange paying money to a country which doesn't want to pay the money back, and they don't make efforts to pay it back.
But she still wants to cut the Greeks some slack. How about another customer here, David Orth, who works in a clothing store?
How do you feel as a German taxpayer bailing out Greece?
I'm probably fine with it, because who is Germany not to help? Because, I mean, we've been pretty much down on the ground some 60, 70 years ago, and we got a lot of money from a lot of countries, especially the US, and it helped.
Ralph Haunschild, commercial photographer, says he believes that in spite of the stern words from Angela Merkel, Germany will do what it takes to save the euro, and he says so it should.
I think it's worth saving, because it makes living in Europe pretty much easier.
You think Germany will ride to the rescue again? Germany will bail out the Greeks?
Yeah, Germany to the rescue.
But even the generous good humour of these young Berliners may be tested this weekend if the Greeks vote again to reject budget cuts and economic reform. At the 8mm bar in Berlin, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, Stephen wraps up his European bar tour from the epicentre of the European debt crisis, Greece. So you've heard of drug-sniffing dogs, right? Well, today we read about a new role for canines in places like Argentina. Dollar sniffers. Yes, they've been trained to sniff out dollars to combat the black market in greenbacks. So it got us thinking, what does money smell like? Now, dollars are made of cotton and linen, and according to the Treasury, different types of inks are used on different denominations. To understand all this a little bit more, we reached out to Stuart Feierstein at Columbia University's Department of Biological Sciences. Dr. Feierstein, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Listen, I have to ask you, what do you call someone like yourself? What's the official title for someone who is an expert on smells?
What we call the field the sense of olfaction is the true sense, is the true word for the sense of smell. So there's olfaction for smell and gustation for taste. But in the end, everybody just calls me a smell expert, I'm afraid.
Okay, there's nothing like smellologist or something.
No, we don't have that one yet.
Okay. So what about money? Does it have a unique smell?
Well, apparently so. Since dogs are able to smell it, I've always thought it did myself personally. You can always catch that, especially new bills.
That's right. We talk about the fresh, you know, the scent of fresh money, and you know you think of people smelling fresh dollar bills. Well, after your hands get on it, it's not so fresh.
Picks up all sorts of ugly stuff. So it wouldn't be a bad idea to deodorize it every now and again, I suppose.
Now, I read that money is basically cotton and linen. Do those have a distinctive scents?
They're very light, primarily the ink rather than the paper in this particular case that gives off the odor.
Dr. Feierstein, I'm just curious, how does it work? When the dog smells this money, how does it get from the nose to the brain? What's happening there?
Yes, well, it's a principle of what we call molecular recognition, which is a big word for something that's actually quite simple. In the nose of a dog, way back in the nose of a dog, and in a person as well, we have small cells that communicate with our brain, and on the surface of those cells are little proteins, which we call receptors. And you can think of it as a sort of a lock and a key. The receptors, these proteins, are like a lock, and the odors are like a key. And if the odor fits the receptor just right, the way a key fits a lock, it will activate it. And upon activating it, a signal gets sent to the brain.
I take it that different scents affect people in certain ways. Do you think, you know, smelling money could, do something to someone in some positive way, some negative way?
Well, it makes me feel a lot better, I have to say. It's kind of like new car smell, you know. It just gives you that feeling of prosperity, doesn't it?
If you could put a scent on money, what scent would you choose?
Oh, that's a good one. Chocolate. Why not make it really good?
That's right. Stuart Feierstein is at Columbia School of Biological Sciences. Dr. Feierstein, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Coming up.
This is a way to engage the public in a new, more effective way and really shore up the trust that they have in us that we're trying to deliver a valuable service.
Potholes in Boston, there's an app for that too. But first, let's do the numbers. Volatility with a Greek accent was the word today on Wall Street. After pinging up and down, the Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed 1.25%, or 155 points, to close at 12,651. The NASDAQ rose 0.6%, that's 17 points, to end at 2836. The S&P 500 lifted 1%, 14 points, to finish at 1329. Tech stocks were all over the place. Facebook pocketed more than 3.75%. Biggest loser was Nokia. It plummeted nearly 16% on news that it would lay off thousands of workers. Yields on Spanish bonds climbed past 7%, just a baby step away from junk status. In the U.S., bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose 1.75%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. In Washington, the Federal Reserve issues industrial production data for May. The 80th Annual U.S. Conference of Mayors continues in Orlando, Florida. Vice President Biden speaks. And on June 15th, 1836, Arkansas became the 25th state to join the Union. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Sarah Gardner in for Kai Rizdal. Any day now, the Supreme Court will rule on President Obama's health care overhaul, Obamacare, as dubbed by the critics. The court may strike down the whole thing or just parts of the new law. We don't know what's going to happen. But whatever happens, some big health insurers have already said they're going to keep up some of the reforms in the Affordable Health Care Act. The question is, what do the people think of it? Time now for Attitude Check.
And the latest poll numbers suggest
margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Frank Newport is the editor-in-chief of Gallup. Frank, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
Not that we are in the business of competing with you on polling, but we talked to some folks in downtown L.A. about the health care law today, and we wondered if this woman's response was typical or not. Just take a listen.
I do not support Obamacare because of the poor people who has no money to keep with the food has to obligate to buy the health insurance.
Okay, you heard that. She obviously hates the health care bill. Now, what do most Americans think?
The fact that she did not like the health care bill does, in fact, correspond to what almost all the recent polling shows, which is that Americans, when asked about it, tilt more negative than positive. The whole idea about the poor, low-income people is kind of interesting because, yes, one of the reasons people object is the individual mandate, which is at the core of the Supreme Court's decision.
Right, and the individual mandate being that people will be forced to buy insurance or pay a penalty, right?
That's right. And in fact, that is the most negative thing of all. We had 7 out of 10 Americans who said it was unconstitutional in their opinion. So if they were on the Supreme Court, they would vote that part of the Health Care Act down.
Of course, it's a complicated bill, right, Frank? I mean, there are a lot of changes in it. Did you get the feeling that people understand the whole thing, that they know what's in it, besides this individual mandate?
A couple of polls actually asked people, do you think you understand this well enough to have an opinion? And at least a majority self-report that they do. But of course, in politics, in a representative democracy, you don't have to demonstrate that you're highly conversant with an issue to have an opinion on it.
Right. You don't make people take a test, Frank, before you poll them, right?
We don't, and that's an interesting issue in polling because some people say we should. But, you know, you don't have to take a test to vote. And the whole essence of a democracy like a jury is that you don't have to pass a knowledge test, that your basic opinions, wherever you are in our American spectrum, should count.
I'm wondering, too, when you took this poll, do you know whether most of these people who you polled have health insurance?
Well, we asked that question. Most Americans do have health insurance, and with that taken into account, they still tilt more negative than positive.
I'm wondering, though, how this is going to affect the presidential election. And here's just a snippet of what we found on the streets of Washington, D.C. today.
I think there are probably stronger issues for the election. I definitely think it's important, but it probably wouldn't be enough to sway my vote.
Frank, what did you find?
I think that that's very representative of what we find from the American public. In fact, we just recently asked Americans who said they're going to vote for Obama or Romney, why, in your own words, and a relatively small percent of voters on either side mentioned health care as the issue that was driving their vote.
Frank Newport is the editor-in-chief at Gallup. The segment we do with them every week is called Attitude Check. There's more about it on our website. That's marketplace.org. Frank, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Greek voters go to the polls this weekend in an election that could determine whether Greece stays in the eurozone. A lot of people are afraid a Greek exit could push the global economy back into recession. Voters are being asked whether Greece should continue with sharp cuts in government spending so the country can get a better hold on its massive debt problems. Commentator Todd Buchholz says, actually, you can pitch in and help pull Greece back from the brink. Just book a flight and go there on vacation.
The Germans, the French, and even the Estonians have been bailing out Greece. But I've got a better idea than stuffing envelopes with euros and mailing them to Athens. If every 6th German, Frenchman, Estonian, and their non-bankrupt EU neighbors took a vacation in Greece, it would generate enough revenue to cover Greece's annual budget deficit. Right now, Greek tourism is about 10% of GDP, and so is its deficit. If tourists flooded into Athens, Mykonos, and Santorini, Greece might survive its Great Depression. Is this possible? Can tourism double or even triple? I propose that the Greek government, on behalf of hotel, sailboat, and moped owners, print discount coupons that can be redeemed by tourists from abroad. Sure, these vouchers would end up as more debt, but it would be long-term debt owed by Greeks to Greeks, rather than to foreigners who now charge lending rates that would knock over the Colossus of Rhodes. When the tourists arrive, they would create a multiplier effect on spending. Tourism is like exports, but even better. When you export, you must actually send valuable stuff abroad. In Greece's case, it would simply be filling empty hotel beds and boarded-up restaurants with middle-aged Germans wearing brown sandals with white socks. If Greece doesn't act fast, its days in the Eurozone are over. I bet they'd sneak out during a busy summer weekend when everyone else is distracted. Maybe during the Olympics, in the middle of the javelin throw or the high-kick synchronized swimming event. And wouldn't that be a sad testament to 2,000 years of Greek history?
Commentator Todd Buchholz was an economic advisor to the first President Bush. He's most recently the author of Rush, Why You Need and Love the Rat Race. Tell us what you think at marketplace.org. Boston is a very old city, at least in American terms, but it's now got a whole department dedicated to city innovation. It's called the Office of New Urban Mechanics. And that office just found a fix for reporting one of the oldest and most lowly of city problems, the pothole. WBUR's Monica Brady-Meyeroff reports.
People use smartphone applications for games, cooking, working out, pretty much anything. Now Boston wants anyone who drives in the city to use their smartphones to report potholes as they pass over them. Boston's new app is called Street Bump. I wanted to see it in action, so I asked a city worker who's an early tester to drive me around. Michael Dennehy knew just the street to go to.
We have just crossed the James Kelly Bridge, heading into South Boston on West
Soon
Broadway.
Enough, we hit a rough patch, and the app starts to record each big bump with an electronic chime.
It's not picking up the small vibrations that I'm feeling, but it is feeling the larger ones.
Yeah, and that's what we've found. If you see something that we're approaching that you think should get a bump, nine times out of ten, we did receive the bump.
Here's how it works. When the app is on, the phone senses the car's movement and speed and can tell when you hit a big bump. It pegs the location using GPS. At the end of the trip, you press a button to upload the data, and voila, you've just reported the exact location of a pothole to the city of Boston. When three people report the same problem, it's automatically sent to a pothole fix-it list.
This only works because we're actually pretty good at filling potholes.
Nigel Jacob is co-chair of the mayor's Office of New Urban Mechanics. He says Boston workers fill reported potholes within a day and a half. His office spent $80,000 to develop the app. But Jacob says the program isn't just about fixing streets. It's about connecting residents with city services.
This is a way to engage the public in a new, more effective way and really shore up the trust that they have in us that we're trying to deliver a valuable service.
Residents here have been using free city apps to report other problems. One allows you to email a picture of graffiti or a broken streetlight and file a report. Boston has tested Street Bump in other cities, in California and New York, and it works. They're giving away the code so those cities can use it to find and fix potholes. Jacob says these apps will transform the way residents see their city services in action. In Boston, I'm Monica Brady-Meyeroff for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And finally, forgive me if I wrap up the show rather quickly today, but there is a huge celebration going on just down the street. I want to try to get out of here and try and avoid a big traffic snarl. LA Kings fans are celebrating the team's first ever Stanley Cup victory. They are also buying a lot of stuff, as our intern Lina Anwer found out.
I am a hardcore Kings fan, baby.
So basically, I see you're wearing LA Kings jerseys. Are you planning to buy more merchandise today?
Probably not today, but hopefully next weekend.
And what kind of stuff are you buying?
Jerseys, baseball caps, whatever it has the Kings logo, I'm there.
And how much do you plan on spending?
I would say about probably $500 or so.
$500.
Just a
yep.
That's it.
How much
it.
Have you spent already?
Probably about $200.
$700 on hockey stuff. Turns out, though, the Kings don't even get all that money. Here's sports economist Andrew Zimbalist.
In terms of merchandising, the teams don't get that directly. What happens in all of the sports leagues is that when merchandise is sold to consumers, the league gets around 16% of the receipts from that, but goes to the central office, and then the central office distributes that equally to all of the teams. And so, you know, if the Montreal Canadiens had gone to the Stanley Cup and won the Stanley Cup, it would have the same impact on the Kings as the Kings going to the Stanley Cup and winning.
Aye, Montreal Canadiens, heaven forbid. Just an idea how crazed the Kings fans are in this town. We read today that some of them were paying up to $600 for seats today at a post-parade rally at the Staples Center. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow climbed 1.25%, or 155 points. The NASDAQ rose 0.6%, that's 17 points. And the S&P 500 gained 1%, 14 points. John Buckley, Nancy Fargali, Stephen Gregory, John Haas, Jonathan Karp, Sylvester Monroe, Dave Shaw, Betsy Streisand, and Celeste Wesson are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is George Judson. I'm Sarah Gardner. Hope you can join us back here tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.